Thanks for listening to Middle-Aged and Mediocre. I'm Cash.
I'm Joel.
And we are a podcast about all things strange and unusual, death, and UFOs, and other creepy,
cults,
weird, random
ghosts.
There you go. Yeah.
Not just naming things in the room.
When there's a murder in a small town with only 12 residents, everyone is a suspect. But when everyone seems to have a motive, detectives still have their work cut out for them. This week, we're traveling to the Outback to talk about the unsolved murder of Patty Moriarty. This is Middle Aged Mediocre. I am Cash.
I'm Joel.
You're Joel.
That's me.
This is Middle Aged Mediocre.
It's
like
us.
I said, episode 6, I believe.
Season 2.
Coming at you.
We're going to change the format up just a little bit. I've realized that.
This is how it starts.
For some reason, not everyone loves.
I won't be here next week.
Our witty banter.
Oh, yeah.
And that's weird because I think we're charming and adorable. But not everyone likes it. So some people just want to hear the story.
Okay.
So from here on out.
So fuck us.
Yeah, fuck us. We're just going to get right to the story.
Okay.
And then afterwards, stick around. And we'll be our normal.
We're going to dive deep into each other.
Stupid selves.
All right.
Dive into each other.
I can't wait.
But like I said, for now, I'm going to talk about
12 people in a town.
Unsolved murder.
That's a dozen.
Patty Moriarty.
All
right. PADDY. He was an Irish fella that moved to Australia. Each morning around 9 a.m., Patty would hop on his red quad bike with his dog and head for the Pink Panther pub to do his morning chores. He would clean the toilets.
That's
and the
adorable.
Showers, and he'd rake the leaves.
That's adorable. The dog with him on the little bike.
The dog
bike.
With him on a little bike. He was a retired 70-year-old man.
An Irishman in Australia.
Yep, he was a former ranch hand born in Ireland. He sported a mustache and had a heart condition.
And a potato.
Oh, come on.
Oh.
Come on. And he'd been paid weekly at this bar with cartons of... Which this is written by an Australian person, too,
okay.
Like the story I found. So there's some weird words on here. So, like, cartons of his favorite brew. I guess that means cases. So, basically, after a few hours of work every day, he would settle into the bar, and he would drink about 8 cans of 4X Gold, an Australian lager.
That's the American dream in
always,
Australia.
Always eight, never less, usually more, is how they described it, his drinking habit.
Old Patty ate.
The path from the far end of town where Patty lived in a converted service station to the door of the bar past the homes and businesses of nearly every resident of Larrimah, which is where he's from, Larrimah, Australia. It was a dry, dusty, and...
Patty had 12 people and a bar.
And, well, you basically have... That's basically what you have, 12 people and the bar.
What do you want to do tonight, mate?
The town was once the terminus of the North Australia Railway. During World War II, Australia's largest army base was nearby. In 1976, the railroad shut down, though, and through the decades, the population dropped from about 100 down to about 50, down to about 25, and then 13 until...
That's a baker's dozen.
The unfortunate death... Of old Patty Moriarty here.
Oh.
So he was number. He was unlucky 13.
Yeah.
So, crikey to that. The remaining townsfolk that were there, mostly in their 70s, the youngest person there was around 50. So things moved.
I mean, that's still pretty young, 50.
I mean.
That's not that old.
50 is the new 12.
Oh, man.
So the town was very... Everybody moved slow. Things got done slow, sometimes not at all. One Maurice Darby said, we don't have Friday, Thursday, or Tuesday. We just get up and go to work. Like, they don't keep track of what's going on. It was
ignorant type, bliss.
It was
down under.
It is the best kind.
Yeah.
It was a type of town where everybody knew everybody else's business, which, like any small town, was both a blessing and a curse. It also attracted a trickle of tourists who were traveling up and down the Stuart Highway, and they would just kind of pull into this little...
Yeah. Only 12 people live here.
Yeah, tiny little area. So behind the chummy quaintness of the town was simmering discontent and infighting among the dozen or so fiercely opinionated and unyielding men and women. It was a dusty, hot town, and even the smallest dispute could blossom into a years-long feud. But the vitriol had never led to any serious violence between the residents. And although some people did go missing along the Stewart Highway from time to time, no one had ever been murdered in Larima. So on his way to the pub the morning of his death, Paddy passed by the site of many of those feuds from town, squabbles he had with neighbors about shop signs, about the proper time of year to burn the bush, about insensitive remarks and barking dogs. He instigated quite a few of those himself. He was a very overly talkative human, and at times he was entertaining, but he had a dark reputation. I don't know if you'd call them enemies, the owner of the pub, 76-year-old Barry Sharp, said, but Paddy used to needle people a bit. I'd put it more down to him being a bit of a larrikin, which larrikin apparently means a shit stirrer.
So, okay.
Larrikin. After the two-minute-long drive along the highway that bisected the town, Paddy was greeted at the Pink Panther by a large statue of its namesake cartoon character out front. So no way you're missing this off Stewart Highway. I get the guy that owns it actually said that the reason why it is pink and has the Pink Panther is because he's like, ain't nobody going to drive by and not see this. Like, I watched a little bit of a video on this. He was very excited. He was very happy with himself over this pink building.
Let's go and get our picture taken.
So it sat beside a roughly 16-foot-tall Darwin beer statue made of concrete and built in the 70s when the Larima Hotel boasted the highest sales of 2-liter Darwin beers in the territory. Sharp enticed travelers with a zoo in the back of the bar, which he built, cultivated, and maintained himself. It featured cockatoos, lorikeets, parrots, finches, possum gliders,
snakes, what could go wrong?
And manatees. But the real draw were crocodiles. Sneaky Sam being the main attraction of the show. The animals cooled their bodies in a man-made water pit surrounded by a rusted iron fence. So you got the bar, you got the zoo. Yeah, what could go wrong with drunk stumbling around in the dark? Paddy took his place at the bar, filled with like little knickknacks and such. On any given day, Paddy would chat with regulars and tourists who had stopped by. Some Larima residents would describe Paddy as an attraction of the pub. Spinning yarns from his time on the ranches and greeting arriving tourists with a hearty, "Good day, folks. Where are you from?"
So he's just from Ireland, but he's just taking over the Australia.
And so it was on that sweltering day, December 16th, 2017, that Paddy sat down to drink his 4X Golds.
Eight of them.
Beers, it turned out, that would be his last.
That's called a Paddy six-pack.
That's a Paddy six-pack. Paddy sixer. Paddy Moriarty and his dog were about to vanish without a trace, kicking off an investigation.
And his dog.
Oh,
man.
Kicking off an investigation that would turn the town upside
Paddy's pup.
And
poor pup.
How is It's Always Sunny not had that sold yet? And spark international media coverage. Initial concern for his well-being soon gave way to dark rumors of murder. In this town, now down to 12 residents, everyone was a suspect. Detective Sergeant Matt Allen pulled into Larima on December 24th, 2017, 8 days after
And he said, "I'm getting too old for this shit, mate."
He was a soft-spoken investigator with over 22 years of experience.
He was getting too old for this shit.
Too old for this shit. He had close-cropped hair and blue eyes and wore the detective's uniform of a long-sleeved dress shirt, tie, and sunglasses. Allen was no
looking
stranger.
Like a treat.
He's probably Liam Neeson, basically. He was no stranger to perplexing cases. People tended to disappear in the territory, and Allen sometimes spearheaded those investigations.
Good job, Allen.
This one was different, though. It was a missing man, presumed dead. His dog had vanished. An undisturbed home and whispers of ill will in a town where nearly all the residents were over the age of 50 and could be listed on one side of a post-it note. The tiny hamlet-turned-crime scene was, as Allen says, a once-in-a-career case. Still, he couldn't let speculation involving sinister plots collar his investigative process. Collating the clues, he and his team of four investigators set out to piece together...
25?
They're almost half the population.
Yeah. You take those two. I guess I'll take those three, yeah. And you get those two.
And... Be back in 10 minutes.
See you at lunch.
The last evening he was seen, according to witnesses, Patty drank more than his usual 8 cans of beer.
Oh!
He ordered his final drink, which he always called his last supper, before heading out sometime after 6 p.m.
Oh, that Patty.
You know, like, you know who Patty
6 p.m.
is.
And he's already just gone. Tell people about his time in Ireland.
The bartender, Richard Simpson, who worked for, well, he worked for that sharp guy that owns the place, told investigators that Patty had a slight wobbly boot, but he wasn't more intoxicated than any normal day. Some tourists had arrived at the Pink Panther in the afternoon. They met Patty briefly, and one of the children actually had, like, really liked his dog. His dog's name was Kelly. She was an Australian sheepdog.
She's a good girl.
As Patty set out for home, the children's mother went upstairs to the floors that housed the toilet, or housed the hotel, to grab a half-eaten roast chicken purchased at the supermarket. She gave it to Patty to feed Kelly. Before leaving, Patty told Barry Sharp, the bar owner, that he'd be around the next day to pick up a lawnmower. I'll see you tomorrow, he said. Righto, Patty, Sharp.
Lawnmower Thursday.
See you tomorrow. Sharp saw Patty and Kelly hop on his quad and head down the highway to a single-story home. There, Patty...
That's probably my favorite John Cougar Mellencamp song.
Head down the highway.
Kelly on my bike. Single-story
home. I guess that... Is that Mellencamp?
Yeah. The Cougar.
There, Patty evidently put his hat on the cooler and his glasses on the table where they would later be found, and the roast chicken in the microwave. Then he started preparing dumplings for dinner. Sharp told Detective Allen that when Patty...
That's what I do when I'm fucking drunk. Dumplings. Fucking make some drunk dumplings!
What is a dumpling?
I have no idea. Okay. I think it's whatever's in the fridge.
I've heard of them
a lot.
You
just, like, wrap it up with some sort of dough and cook it.
So you just, like, grab some shit out of the fridge, throw it in the loaf of bread, and just ball it all up.
Uh-huh.
All
right. Stuff it in your freaking talk hole.
It's delicious.
I'll have two.
Sharp told Detective Allen that when Patty didn't show up to pick up the lawnmower or to watch the affairs or the show Landline, a weekly ritual locals referred to as going to church. These are just delightful people.
I knew when he wasn't there to watch TV with us.
The guy found Patty's absence unusual but not alarming. Although he did have his rituals, Patty would on occasion just leave town unannounced to visit old friends.
Patty ain't got to explain shit to
That's
you.
That's right. Patty's his own man.
Patty gonna do what Patty gonna do.
He only needs to tell his dog where he's going.
Yeah, you're not Patty's mother. You don't need to know, sir. Oh my God, Patty. Oh, Patty's out of town. He didn't tell me.
Why didn't he tell
me? Why is everything about you?
I mean, honestly, though, he could have told everyone. Like, he could have walked out. Hey, guys. Hey.
Hey.
I'm leaving.
Like, all right, Patty, no one gives a fuck. Go.
Crikey. The front, or who, so Sharp told Detective Allen, oh yeah, so he didn't show up. Sharp,
he didn't show up for that lawnmower.
He didn't show
or
up.
The TV show.
Sharp went to Patty's home on Monday to check on him. The front door was locked, so he entered through the open screen door in the back. Patty, you here? Are you here? That's what he was saying as he went through the house. The house was undisturbed, though. Hat was on the cooler, glasses were on the table, chicken was in the microwave. The following day, Sharp called the couple, Mark and Karen Rayner, two of the youngest
what
people.
What else did he do that day?
They were two of the youngest people.
He's like, well, that's
people.
It. I went to the house. That's it for today. I heard this break.
Mark was 60. Karen was almost 50. And they were regulars at the pub. Karen had been the manager of the Pink Panther up until a few months prior, and she still did the accounting as favor to Sharp. She and Mark considered Patty a friend. The Rayners hadn't seen him either, and they were pissed. And a little more than a little surprised. He'd been missing for 2 days, and Sharp hadn't told them or called the police. In her estimation, it just wasn't like Patty to disappear like this. Karen demanded Sharp call the authorities, and she and Mark went over to look over to Patty's to look around. Mark searched around the property and down the well, along the road that intersects the highway, and down to the dump. He worried that Patty had gone for a wander and been bitten by a snake.
Ooh.
Or they had a heart attack.
It's the Outback.
So, I mean, everything could have killed him.
It's the Outback.
Yeah.
Maybe a dingo ate your Patty.
The Rainers went looking further out in the countryside. They walked around outside of town, zigzagging across the intersecting roads, long enough that Mark got sunstroke. Aww. So that's not good. However, there was no sign of Patty or his dog. Detective Allen and his team were faced with a perplexing scenario. where they arrived the following Sunday. Patty's home looked as if he intended to leave his apartment only briefly. Sensitive about
no one leaves chicken in a microwave.
No, you never leave chicken in a microwave. You're gonna eat that.
I'm
chicken.
I'm gonna eat that motherfucking chicken.
Sensitive about his baldness, Patty rarely went anywhere without a hat. Yet there it was on the cooler. I know how that goes.
Yep, been there. I'm free of that now, though. Fuck it.
Cold dumplings were still on the
table. Bald ass motherfucker.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta shave my head probably tomorrow. Actually,
I'll help you.
I'm good.
Okay.
The glasses that he wore every day were also left in the apartment. His wallet had over $200 inside and was still laying there. His truck and his quad were still in the shed. But there was no sign of Patty.
He disappeared.
The police conducted 3 days of searches, covering roughly 50 miles around Larimer. They used helicopters. They searched the dump, sent divers to skim the waters around the dam, scoured the nearby limestone caverns. Sounds like a very dangerous, limestone caverns. Yeah. You're just wandering around drunk as shit. There's crocodiles in the back of the bar.
Patty would know about this stuff.
It was plausible that he'd just wandered off and fallen ill. After all, he did have a heart condition. He drank roughly 10 beers a day. And the terrain around Larimer could be treacherous.
A Patty six pack?
Yeah. He was also, though, an experienced bushman. And he was fit despite his heart condition.
That's my new Tinder profile.
Experienced bushman.
Yep.
And fit despite my heart condition.
It's broken, baby.
Patty walked his dog to the dump every morning, but wasn't known to go that far in the evenings.
Just not a day unless you started with the walk to the dump.
Yeah, that's right. That's how I start my day. And where was the dog?
He did like to get trashed.
Yep.
Mate.
Even if Patty had suddenly died somewhere, Detective Allen reasoned that the dog would have at least turned up somewhere. Like, he would have probably came back.
Yeah,
to the
even
bar
though she's a good girl, she would have eventually had to.
Well, that's why she's a good girl. She
can find somebody, yeah.
Allen contacted animal shelter.
Or ate his face.
Or ate him whole.
Yeah, even then, she's a good girl.
And then went and got killed by a crocodile.
She's a good girl.
Yeah. Allen contacted animal shelters in the region looking for Kelly. No luck, though. Detective Allen, during his interviews, had found an undercurrent of tension among the remaining 12 residents, ones that stemmed from years of escalating feuds, both small and large, unusual for even for a tiny town where everyone knows each other's business. For example, residents had been divided about how to preserve and restore the old railway precinct. A fight so bitter that rival associations were born.
Oh, man.
New feuds emerged amid sweeping accusations.
Bad hand signs and stuff.
And everything from harassment to assault, arson, and intentional poisoning of plants occurred within the few miles of the town. Residents fought over the names of the town's two streets.
It's First and Second Street!
A pet buffalo that had been shot and eaten. A peacock fed to a crocodile at the Pink Panther in a fit of revenge.
No more animals, okay? Y'all fucked it up there.
And a rogue speed bump someone installed in secret.
A rogue speed bump.
Patty Moriarty seemed to be at the center of many of these disputes. And troubling facts would soon emerge. Gunshots heard outside the Pink Panther the night before Patty's disappearance.
Oh.
And a mysterious fight between Patty and another man on the side of the highway only days earlier. When the exhaustive searches turned up nothing, Detective Allen had no choice but to turn his attention to a criminal explanation. The Pink Panther, which in addition to being a pub, hotel, zoo, was also the town's Greyhound bus station.
Oh, good.
Its post office.
And its Ticketmaster location.
The center of gossip. It was the natural place for Allen and his team to start looking for answers. The crocodile out
so
back.
What do you guys hear about this murder?
That's
weird.
What do you know, crocodile?
That's weird, isn't it? He's gone? What?
The crocodile out
Gossip
back,
Girl,
which would provide the perfect means of disposing a body, did not go unnoticed by the investigators.
Alligators love to eat people.
Well, these are crocodiles.
Crocodiles.
They do not like being called alligators.
I apologize.
The Rainers were...
They all look the same to me.
Oh, man.
Why alligators and crocodiles.
I don't like that. The Rainers were upset with Barry Sharp for waiting so long after Patty's disappearance to call the police. He also did have the means of disposing two bodies, a human and a dog. But police learned that Sharp and Patty were very close friends. Not only did Patty work at the pub and spend his days there, but the two would often just sit sat together. The two sat on the board of a local progress association together.
You could kill a close friend.
Y'all, yeah, definitely.
Sometimes that's who you want to kill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like at any
Yeah. Moment. Looking at you.
At any moment.
Keep that thing on me.
In his testimony, Sharp would describe Patty as excellent company. He loved to chat. And he loved talking to strangers. Anyone new that would come to town, he'd always say hello to them and try to get conversation going.
I would hate that if I was new to town. I'm like, look, buddy, back off.
He was just a happy-go-lucky bloke.
Yeah.
There was another character to connect to the pub, however, who most certainly had friction with Patty. Richard Simpson, the bartender. Simpson was in his 50s with a round, ruddy face and long, wheat-collared beard kept in tight, cascading curls. He often consumed alcohol to the point of severe inebriation.
Well, he's a bartender.
He was typically drunk before noon. Several times, I'm listening. Several times a month, Sharp had to tell him to abandon his shift and go home. On at least one occasion, Simpson's behavior had become outright hostile, and it wasn't hard to connect these outbursts to the pub.
Simpson!
One night, prior to Patty's disappearance, while Karen Rayner worked on invoices at the pub, Simpson had shown up intoxicated. Agitated, unprovoked, he ran to the office and accused her of stealing. Simpson told her that she and her husband were no longer welcome at the Pink Panther.
Ooh.
Your family is in big trouble here, he warned Karen. As the rumor mill churned during the investigation, some Laramie residents had already suggested that Simpson, who had taken Oxycontin in the past for a broken back, had grown increasingly enraged at Patty's growing stature at the pub. That Patty was more of a second-in-command than Simpson was. This thread was...
Jealousy.
And that thread was compelling but seemed thin until police uncovered another potential reason for bitterness. It was suggested that Simpson and Patty were also involved in an ongoing dispute over their dogs.
Oh.
Patty loved dogs.
Motherfuckers that have dogs will do some crazy shit for their dogs.
Yeah. I'll kill a man.
Yeah. I got a cat and
I mean, my cat can figure shit out.
Yeah. Yeah, you've threatened me for threatening Beasley before.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I will.
That's our feud that we have.
I'll kill you in a second.
Right. All right. So,
Patty loved dogs. For years, he and his previous companion, Rover, a good boy, who was a black border collie, were inseparable.
Oh, black border collie. Mm-hmm. Australia's got the best dogs.
When Rover died, Patty got Kelly, who went with him everywhere and enjoyed the same. And people would say that they were so close that Kelly was Patty's wife.
She'd eat food right out of his mouth.
Yeah. Simpson, meanwhile, owned a pair of temperamental they're called American Staffies.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. Which Sharp characterized during the investigation as untrustworthy. The dogs were. In the small town,
frequent... That's probably because of their owner.
Frequent run-ins between animals could provoke emotional responses.
There's no such thing as a bad dog. Cesar Millan says it's a bad human.
He also says...
You got to snap his mind out of it. Dude, I love Cesar Millan.
Is he the one that first was like, you got to bite your dog back?
Maybe.
I think he told everybody that too. That's hilarious.
I've never heard that, but he always says you gotta just establish dominance.
Yeah, there's like I think he's the one that started that, but like, yeah, you should bite if the dog bites you, bite it back.
He's got new episodes on Disney Plus. He's got a whole compound. We'll save the Cesar Millan episode for next time.
Well, if you ever come over here and I don't have a face anymore, uh-huh. Because I took his advice to try to bite Beasley.
Don't bite Beasley. He's a good boy.
Simpson's dogs were loud and potentially dangerous. They often tried to attack Kelly. Not a man to hold his tongue, Patty could be nasty when enraged, and with undercurrents of a potential rivalry making things prickly between the two men, was it feasible to imagine Simpson flying into a drunken rage and killing Patty?
A drunken, pilled-up rage.
Pills and booze and...
That's a recipe for a disaster.
Added to that...
That's my grandma's recipe.
Simpson was also one of the last people to have seen Patty alive. And working at the bar gave him access...
I'm no detective! Oh.
I mean, this guy's starting to sound like a pretty good suspect.
Yeah.
And he would have had access to the crocodiles out back.
God, I wish I would say that about me once. Joe had access to the crocodiles. If you're out there and you have crocodiles and you want to give me access, I will take that shit to heart and I will take it seriously. Okay, go on. Sorry. The Simpsons looking more and more like the guy. He had access to the crocodiles. Or alligators?
Crocodiles.
Crocodiles.
Without forensic evidence, all Allen had to go on was speculation and suspicion. And that wasn't enough. A wrongful arrest risked the entire investigation.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Double jeopardy, eh? They have that?
No, you just can't try the same person.
Okay. Yeah.
Confronted about his possible involvement in Patty's disappearance, Simpson scoffed at the mounting whispers, ooh, calling those who were suspicious of him goddamn fools. And besides, if it was rivalries Detective Allen was after, Simpson could easily point Allen to one for the ages. There was no rivalry in town like the years of boiling rage between Patty and the local tea shop owner, Fran Hodgetts.
They got a bar and a tea shop?
Yep.
Dang.
To those who ask who threw the first kangaroo, can possibly get you lost in the details. But as police found, various tales of roadkill tossing pointed to one undeniable fact. Nobody in Larima despised one another like Patty and Fran. Hodgetts' tea shop was in a converted police station and jail along the Seward Highway. Weathered stuffed animals like SpongeBob and Tweety Bird dangled from the veranda out front. In the back of the shop were a set of ovens that Fran used to cook meat pies with fillings ranging from camel to crocodile. An investigator.
She had access to the crocodile.
Everybody in town has access. Investigators took special notice of the ovens as they were particularly large. But the defining
large enough to cook a man.
But the defining characteristics of the tea shop, at least in the context of a murder investigation, was its proximity to Patty Moriarty's house, situated just up and across the highway. The proximity had put Fran and Patty into each other's daily orbit and made them subject to an escalating cycle of ire and retribution.
Will they or won't they? Patty and Fran, what do you think? Sexual tension!
She didn't like Patty. She was always accusing Patty of stealing things from her property, and she didn't like him. Bobby Roth, Fran's former dishwasher, testified. She used to say, I'll kill Patty.
Wow.
So, you know.
If you're going to kill someone, don't say aloud that you're going to kill that person. I'm not trying to teach people how to kill people, but
through interviews, Detective Allen determined that Fran and Patty had been cordial with each other in the past. They had known each other for decades, and Fran had taken food over to Patty after he'd undergone bypass surgery in 2006. But things started to erode when Patty grew frustrated about the tourists parking on his side of the highway, as well as about the ever-growing displays of signage outside of Fran's tea house. All of it written in black and white script, brekkie waffles, buffalo or beef pies, no toilets. I love brekkie waffles.
Brekkie waffles. Those are, but I love the brekkie. I think they should advertise the camel pies.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be like, do you got some camel lips on? Mm-hmm.
What about some toes?
See, this is a good case of like, you shouldn't just don't give a fuck. Like Patty, like who cares if someone's parking on your side of the highway? You're fucking getting drunk by 6 o'clock. Like,
you're coming home, going to sleep.
Who gives a fuck? He gave too
much of a fuck.
Now he's dead.
In response,
I figure he is.
Patty took to belittling Fran's pies.
Oh,
Fran has got the worst pies, and I'll fucking tell you that. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation journalist,
"I wouldn't fuck her pie with your dick, mate."
He told a journalist that in a 2011 interview. Why were they interviewing? What kind of story
what
is this?
What journalist? There's fucking 13 people in town.
He said
a little press thing in his hat. Patty, tell me about Fran's pies.
The flash of the camera.
He followed him all day. He's like, all right, goddamn it, finally. I'll speak. I'll tell you. They're no damn good.
He also told him that I used to go over there and the dog wouldn't even eat Fran's pies.
Oh, you leave Rover out of this. He was a good boy.
When Barry Sharp began serving pies at the Pink Panther, giving Fran an unwelcome spot of competition, Patty posted a sign on his side of the street, directly across from Fran's, alerting passerbys to the best pies in town over at the Pink Panther.
Patty knows pies.
And he made sure to point out that the $5 pies at Pink Panther were considerably cheaper than France's $13 pies.
Pink Panther's pies.
As tensions between the two escalated, Patty started calling Fran a bush pig.
Oh.
And that's when the kangaroo throwing started.
The pair Wait, I thought they jumped. Huh?
The pair were both known to drag dead kangaroos.
What's that? That's Patty and Fran. I'm doing it again.
Now, it does say that it's common to find dead kangaroos along the highways. Yeah. Just like here, it'd be deer.
They're suicidal. Kangaroos are just sad.
I don't blame them.
Uh-huh.
They dragged them onto each other's properties. Once, after Fran threw roadkill into Patty's yard, Patty allegedly shoved the back end of a dead kangaroo through the window at the rear of the pie shop so that it would cook as soon as she fired up the oven in the morning.
Man, there's a dead kangaroo's rear in my pie.
Yeah.
Well, eat around it. It's not going to kill you.
I think it's going to eat it. On another occasion, he
That's classic Patty right there.
Vintage Patty.
A drunk bastard.
Another occasion, he was accused of cutting off a kangaroo's penis.
Oh, Patty!
And throwing it on her driveway.
What the... Come on! Was it dead?
Yeah,
the kangaroo?
Okay. Yeah, because they just find like the dead ones on the side. All right. A few days before he vanished, Fran had
accused... How big is a kangaroo's dick?
I've never seen one.
I haven't either.
I didn't know they had them.
Like, yeah.
Is that what they keep in those little pouches?
I don't know.
Let me get my dick out of this pouch.
Except that kangaroo. Yeah, I don't want to Google how big is a kangaroo.
I'm not going to.
Somebody out there Google it, let us know.
I usually would Google everything, but I just don't want to see that right now. I'll wait till you leave.
You'll have the weirdest shit starting popping up on your phone or your computer.
I'm going to wait till you leave so I can enjoy it.
Google on Pornhub.
Just before,
kangaroo dick.
Just a few days before he vanished, Fran had accused him of dropping yet another dead kangaroo outside her bedroom window.
Not again, Patty.
Fran regularly reported Patty to the nearby police, who would come to town and investigate, but never find much evidence to support her claims. The dispute escalated to the point where Fran filed for an order of protection against Patty. Fran told ABC in an interview, he started pinching umbrellas from here, damaging my property, and giving me big heaps of cheek and telling customers not to come in and putting broken glass under car wheels. I had trouble with him all along, big trouble. He started stirring shit around town about what I was doing in the kitchen and how much I was selling my pies for.
I'll kill him!
Because he was very jealous of what I've got here.
Jealous of my pies!
I mean, Patty sounds like a real scamp.
Yeah.
Putting glass under car wheels. Like, come on, dude. Those people didn't do anything to you. Your feud with Fran.
And anyone that supports Fran.
In Catherine local court in October 2016, Fran accused Patty of a litany of abuses, each small enough in its own right, but in her mind they formed a kind of cumulative torture and a serious threat. Stealing her umbrella. She's really upset about that.
Umbrella.
Destroying her furniture. Cutting her security camera feed, placing a newspaper under her fence smeared with human feces. Patty. A judge dismissed
First
her claim.
First a kangaroo dick and now this. Grow up!
Citing a lack of evidence. Do you have the human feces?
Yeah, did they?
If like, not, then I'm sorry.
You gotta save that shit. Literally.
Oh, literally, mate! This only increased her frustration with Patty. In the months before he disappeared, she would tell anyone...
That's hard to ignore.
Smeared shit.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I cannot give a fuck about a lot of shit, but...
She would start sitting across from the highway and scream over at Patty, why don't you go back to Ireland? Which, I mean...
That's racist.
Anytime you start with the words, why don't you go back
to... Yeah.
Just stop.
Mate, sorry.
I can't stop! Years of abuse, lost business, unsympathetic police. It was easy to find motive in Fran's feud with Patty. Those pie ovens, which could crank hot enough to render a man down to nothing, aroused more than a little suspicion as well. Made a big old detective boner. Detective Allen's team searched the tea shop and tested her meat pies.
Ooh.
Sounds dirty.
Yeah.
They checked her incinerator. Ooh. Her freezer. Ooh. And the shed out back. All right.
What about her trunk?
Alas, the searches yielded nothing of use. The meat cooked in Fran's ovens was neither human nor canine, according to the experts. A lot of camel, though. Mostly camel. Yeah.
The experts. Like, did they taste dog? Like, let's see how it tastes.
Doesn't taste like dog.
All right, Fran, let me take a bite out of your ass.
There was also the question of Fran's stature. She was suffering from arthritis. She was no match physically for Patty or even Kelly the dog.
Yeah.
If the crime in question involved moving bodies, as disposal certainly would, it was inconceivable that she would have been able to pull it off alone. All of this led the investigator to conclude that if Fran had been involved somehow, she had not acted alone.
I was going to say, Fran and Simpson could have done it.
Mm-hmm. Fran Simpson. While Allen interviewed residents, so did reporters. Australian media became infatuated with the story of the mysterious disappearance, and more keenly, a potential small-town murder. Theories fled everywhere as the country watched the investigation practically in real time. Alongside the fed-to-the-croc scenario, some conjured up images of Sweeney Todd and surmised that Patty might have gone through the mincer into Fran's meat pies. Camera crews regularly...
They tested it.
They said no human meat. We know human meat.
Yeah.
Camera crews regularly descended into the town. Fran Hodgetts and Barry Sharp became household names.
I bet pies were just flying off the shelf.
Fran's pies were just... could not keep them in stock. And the story of Patty Moriarty appeared in newspapers from the U.S. to the U.K. A paper in his native Ireland tried to trace his family roots and his journey to the... Australian territory. Fran especially seemed to relish the media attention, denying any involvement, while still talking shit about Patty. I don't know where he is, she told ABC.
Probably cutting off a kangaroo's dick somewhere.
But I'm not sad that he's gone. Other Larimer residents were as perplexed by the case's strange circumstances as the media was. It was a town of fewer than a dozen residents, and as Barry Sharp told an interviewer, to my way of thinking, one of them is a murderer. As the weeks and months went by and the media scrutiny intensified, the pressure mounted on Detective Allen and his team to provide answers. Circumstantially...
Just close your eyes and pick 1 to 12 people.
Just pick somebody.
You have a pretty good chance.
1 to 12.
Yep.
Let's just say all 12 of you did. And then, circumstantially, Fran was the most obvious suspect, but not a perfect one. Could Bill Hodgetts, her one-time lover, be the missing piece? The two were never married, although they were together for decades, and she took his name. Bill was a prolific drinker.
Sure, that's not all she took.
He was known to drink about 2 cases of beer a day.
Damn!
About 48 beers a day. So
that's a start, Rook.
Patty had nothing on him.
Yeah.
Before switching, that was back in his prime, before he switched to light beers several decades later and earned the nickname Billy Lightcan. That's just not that...
Billy Lightcan.
So old Billy Lightcan and Patty had known each other for years. In their younger days, running into each other over drinks in towns around the uppermost part of the Northern Territory, where Bill worked as a trucker and Patty as a ranch hand. In Larimer, however, the relationship was tested amid Fran's and Patty's acrimony. Bill was often called to intervene.
Bill trying to get some of that pie.
That's right.
You know?
And he'd tell Patty to back off, and sometimes they'd get heated.
Yeah.
Once Bill and Fran separated, however, and she kicked him off the property, allegiances shifted. Stricken with cancer of the jaw, Bill moved into a trailer near the Pink Panther where Patty worked. Fran and Bill constantly fought over money. Soon, Fran was sure Bill was helping Patty torment her, cutting the wire to a CCTV camera she'd installed, and then poisoning the garden that she was working so hard to restore.
Oh.
A woman named Bobby Roth.
They got a lot of drama in this town.
A lot of drama.
This needs to be like a Fox show or something.
I feel like with only 12 people in a town, it does get easier to have that kind of drama.
Yeah.
Because you're only around those people all the time.
You're going to find, reasons to just hate them.
A woman named Bobby Roth washed dishes for Fran for a short time, and her husband, Carl Roth, did some handyman work. They found Patty to be rude and obnoxious when he drank, and they were unimpressed by his Irish temper. Carl, who worked in fire and rescue for 18 years, had recently confronted Patty for starting fires during the windy and dry time of year, and the confrontation grew quite tense. Bobby Roth reported hearing gunshots outside the Pink Panther the night before Patty's disappearance. Several people in Larimer had kept guns, though. Carl Roth himself was a firearms enthusiast, and he kept 8 guns at home.
It's the Outback.
Everybody's got a gun.
Yeah.
Simpson said shots at the pub wouldn't be out of the ordinary. Sharp even kept a shotgun.
I'll tell you tonight, they don't have shots at the Pink Panther pub.
That's the night we closed down Laramie.
Yeah. There's alligators.
He's got zebra
crocodiles here, sir. Not alligators.
And we all have access to
them. If you got an alligator, get the fuck out of here.
Let me find where I'm at here.
See you later, alligator.
Stewart Highway, which stretches through the region and runs through Laramie, had an equally ominous reputation, The 2005 horror film Wolf Creek, about a madman who hunts captured travelers, was inspired by the real-life backpacker killers Ivan Milat and Bradley Murdoch, who had gone on several killing sprees traveling Stewart Highway. Peter Falconio, a British backpacker, was shot and killed in 2001 near the Northern Territory after he and his girlfriend were ambushed by Murdoch. His body was never found. Richard Rowe, a 40-year-old Northern Territory man, went missing from the town of Catherine in 2016, a suspected victim of drug-related foul play. By the way, Wolf Creek is an awesome movie if you haven't seen it.
I think I might have.
Detective Allen worked the Rowe case, a mystery that remains unsolved, and added more pressure on the police to crack the Moriarty case. Could an outsider have killed Patty? It was possible. Hundreds of travelers and drifters in caravans and trucks stopped in Laramie for a bite to eat or drink.
Parked on his side of the road.
God damn it.
Maybe he got in one of their faces and
put glass under their goddamn tires.
Yeah. Threw him in the back of the truck with the dog. Killed him.
But there were too many plausible leads to believe this was a random murder. And there was one clue that stuck out like a jagged edge. 3 days before his disappearance, Patty Moriarty was seen arguing with a mysterious man on the far end of town.
Ooh, did he have a cape on?
And a big mustache. The fight was intense, nearly coming to blows, and the other Laramie. And the resident that he was arguing with was a Laramie resident. He was so reclusive that few people could even say what he looked like. So this is just like one of the 12 people went down and nobody really even sees
him. They don't know so well.
Outside the Catherine Courthouse, a single-story peach-collared structure across the street from a McDonald's, members of the National
Interact... They got a McDonald's?
I was pretty shocked by. But yeah, so they had tons of media there. After nearly 6 months and hundreds of interviews with residents, among others that knew Patty, Detective Allen had ran out of time. The advanced age of everyone in town and the shifting theories propagated by media and locals would make the case harder to solve as weeks and months ground on. Territory authorities had agreed to call for a coroner's inquest, an unusual event for criminal cases, but a move fit for finding answers in this case, where everyone had a story to tell. Allen had handed over the contents of his investigation to an appointed judge and lawyer, and almost all residents of Laramie would be interviewed under oath to answer the question stumping a nation. What happened to Patty Moriarty? The 2-day inquest was held in a tiny...
How has it not happened before?
In tiny courtroom number 2, roughly 5 by 4 meters in size. The judge, territory coroner Greg Kavanaugh, sat behind a large table. At one end of the table was deputy coroner Kelvin Curry, a lawyer who would question the witnesses. At the other end sat a pair of lawyers representing a few of the Laramie residents who figured on needing the extra protection. Observers and journalists squeezed into every inch of the room. Also among the crowd were a few curious tourists and several friends of Patty who made it known that they suspected foul play. On the first day of the inquest, the coroner's office appeared ill-prepared for the attention the case was receiving. "Why are all the media here, Kelvin?" Judge Kavanaugh asked Curry. "We're going to need that chair for people that are going to give evidence, won't we?" We will, Your Honor. We will need the other chair. Like, only so many chairs in there. You would be...
I was going to say, call me.
You'd be huge in there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the chair guy.
We need him.
The inquest soon gave away to becoming a circus. And as the hearing went on, attention returned again and again to Fran Hodgetts. When Bobby Roth, Fran's one-time dishwasher, took the stand, she told Curry that Fran had given her $30,000, which is about $22,000 American, U.S. dollars, to hold for her, ostensibly to hide it from Bill, Fran's ex. But Fran had arranged to have the money picked up in the interim, perhaps suggesting something had changed. Like maybe she paid someone to kill Patty.
Yeah.
During the search of Fran's property, the police found about $7,000 and a plastic bag in the freezer. This could have just been her savings. Maybe she didn't trust banks, or it could have been intended as a payment to someone. possibly as a payment to murder Patty, like I said. In the tiny courtroom, the full weight of Curry's questioning came down on Fran as she sat in the witness chair. Meticulously, Curry walked through the many grievances she had with Patty. How many times have you said, "I'm going to murder him," Curry asked. Fucking millions. Millions, millions of times, she replied.
Fucking millions.
Then she added, "I'm riddled with arthritis. Imagine me carrying a dead dog and a bloody body. Oh, come on.
Who said they were carried, Fran?"
Curry says, "And that's what stopped you from killing Patty?" "No, no, 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 no. That's not my nature. That's not my nature. I'm a lover, not a fighter." Fran became flustered as the questioning went on. She said that she'd been watching a documentary on tuna the night of the disappearance. That's a pretty solid alibi.
Yeah, the tuna documentary.
An albacore alibi. She called herself the victim and said that police and media harassment had harmed her business and her health. "I've had my incinerators done. I've had my septics pumped out. I've had my house done 3 or 4 times with nothing. Nobody found anything. I've had, you know, I had my freezers in my shop, lids open, looking in my freezer, you know. How do you think I feel?"
"Violated."
"I don't lie, I don't bullshit, and I've been through hell. Now, this 6 months that I've been here, I've been abused and accused and blackmailed. And you know what? I've got breast cancer now through this. I've just found out about it because of my worry." It looked bad for Fran, though. But as she sat in the witness chair, Curry moved the lens of suspicion away from her. On December 13, 2017, 3 days before Patty's disappearance, his dog Kelly had wandered over the highway and up the fence along Fran's property. Pink Panther bartender Richard Simpson, who had witnessed the incident and disclosed it to investigators, heard Kelly barking and then a man's angry shouting. Kelly continued to bark, and Patty crossed the road towards the pie shop. As Patty restrained Kelly, Simpson saw Patty and another man have an angry exchange over the pie shop fence. The man was Owen Laurie, Fran Hodgett's gardener. During the inquest, Calvin Curry attempted to get to the root. Get it? He's a gardener. Of Fran's relationship.
I can dig it.
With her gardener. "I take it what you're saying is you wanted Owen to protect you from Patty," he asked. "Not protect me, to help me look for everything, keep everybody off my property, to stop people from doing things to my property. But the person you wanted help with, the only person that ever helped me is Mr. Owen. He's the only one who's been honest, hasn't taken anything, hasn't stolen anything. He's an honest man." Lori, like Fran and Patty, was an older man. He was in his 70s. But in his younger days, he had toured parts of Australia as a tent boxer, which was a fighter who just got in the ring for cash and entertained small crowds. He worked various labor jobs around the country, ended up in Larima after responding to a newspaper help wanted ad for a gardener. When he called Fran about the gardening job, she'd instructed him to come on over to the remote town, bring a blanket, and spend the night. That's how she gets you in there.
Hell yeah.
With her pies. The next morning, she and Lori sat at the table. She was shaking with frustration and told him everything that had been happening with Patty. She told him about the alleged stealing and the harassment, the dead kangaroos, and the poison garden. Lori wanted nothing to do with the feud, but he needed a job and a place to stay. Once in Larima, he spent the days in solitude. He worked in the garden, went to Fran's to eat, otherwise kept to himself, spent the evenings on his computer. Despite living in a town with only 10 people, nobody in Larima besides Fran could even describe Lori. So he's the one that nobody even really sees. One afternoon, Fran spotted Lori planting trees along a fence line. "Don't put them over there, Owen. The boys can poison them. Any fucking bastard comes in here and poisons my fucking garden," Lori said. "There'll be the first murder in Larima." A lot of people just telling themselves. Although I guess if all 12 people have one point said, "I'll fucking murder Patty."
Yeah, who hasn't?
Doesn't really make much for a
clue. Who hasn't threatened Patty?
On December 12th, 4 days before his disappearance, Fran saw Patty drag a dead kangaroo onto her property. The next day, before she headed out to buy supplies in Darwin, Fran told her gardener about it. "Patty threw a kangaroo while you were away yesterday on the property." "I know, I can smell it," he said. "I've just had words with him about the dog coming over the road." According to Fran, Lori told her about his exchange with Patty and said he went to jump the fence to confront him. Patty ran across the highway inside his property. "Fucking weak piss," Lori said. Before she left for Darwin, Fran told Lori, "Don't do anything stupid because I'm going to Darwin and I don't want to come back and bail you out of jail." Curry asked her if Lori seemed upset. "Angry, yeah, angry. Yeah, I'd be lying if I said no. Yeah, he was angry.
He was mad.
He was pissed.
Mad enough to kill.
Fucking weak piss." A few days after the disappearance of Patty, police swarmed his home. Fran, across the way, would later tell police that as they came, Owen Laurie had called her upstairs to look at what was going on. She assumed it was some kind of drug bust. And Owen said to me, the first thing he said was, oh, I thought they were coming for me. Laurie told Curry that he's got osteoporosis, explaining how he couldn't have killed Patty. If I did something violent like that, it would break all my bloody bones. Laurie acknowledged that he'd had words with Moriarty about his dog, but denied that it was heated or that there were threats exchanged. When Curry pointed out that Laurie had originally refused to come to the police station for an interview, he evaded that too, claiming that he was a solitary person and would happily agree to a police interview at his home. When Curry asked about Laurie's comment about the first murder in Larima, Laurie replied, that was a joke. It was said jokingly. People say things like that. I had no intention of murdering anyone. Curry replied,
get it?
Curry replied, people have been murdered for less. And Curry responded with, I guess so. The circumstantial evidence, however, was difficult to ignore. Among the most damning revelations was Laurie's own account of his whereabouts the evening Patty disappeared. Around dusk on December 16, 2017, a message had appeared on Laurie's computer screen from a virus detector that his computer might be infected. It provided a phone number to call for a solution. He tried to Skype the number, but it didn't go through. Around the same time, Patty Moriarty had finished his last supper at the Pig Panther, accepted the roast chicken from the traveling family, and headed home on his quad bike with Kelly on the back. It was around 6:30. Laurie left his lodging on the grounds of Fran's tea shop and made his way to the town's only phone box along the highway, where he made two unanswered calls to the virus hotline. The calls were made at 6:30 and 6:31. The payphone was directly across from the home from Patty Moriarty. Fran Hodgetts defended Laurie during her testimony, insisting that he couldn't have done it, that he was a good man, but even she wavered when presented with the timeline of events. Curry read aloud her statement to police. I'm putting these little bits together, and I'm thinking, hang on, this is... Look at my hair. It's standing up in my arms. Curry told Fran, you're putting it together that he was the person... No. Who killed Patty? Circumstances seemed to point in that direction, but that wasn't enough for an arrest and an indictment. The police found no physical evidence to support the theory that Laurie killed Patty.
You gotta have a body. There's no death without a body.
Croc's gonna take care of that. There was no incriminating DNA found on his car or on any of Patty's vehicles. No physical evidence turned up in any of the searches of Fran's property. Whatever happened to Patty Moriarty that night, a thorough job was done of it. After the inquest was adjourned and the tiny courtroom cleared, Hodgetts and Laurie reportedly rode in a car together for the trip home. This past February, this story was written in 2020, I believe. The police renewed and increased their offer for information to $250,000.
Damn.
For anyone that knows something, but no one has claimed it. Owen Laurie left town not long after testifying. No charges have been filed in the case. Some individuals have been cleared and others have not. When asked recently about Laurie, Detective Sergeant Matt Allen said, the investigation is still going on with him. The Moriarty case still consumes Detective Allen. He can't help but wonder whether he and his team missed some crucial detail that would have cracked it wide open. He says that they're all better investigators because of this case. I would have liked to have met Patty, he says. It's difficult to comprehend that despite the amount of time and effort put into the search for Patty, we still can't find him. Something is just not right about this. Someone out there knows what happened to Patty. Fran Hodgetts eventually left Larima too to live with her daughter in Melbourne and finish treatment for breast cancer. On a recent phone call, she insisted again that she had nothing to do with Patty's disappearance and says the police have told her they know as much. She also stands by what she told the inquest, that she believes Laurie didn't kill him either. With her cancer in remission, she plans on returning to Northern Territory soon. She expects to find Larima better without Patty. He was a horrible man. Nobody liked him, she insists. He caused a lot of trouble in Larima.
She sounds like a peach.
Whoever done it, whatever happened to him, it was a godsend. Some have gone, others have arrived, and the population of Larima stands at around 10. A few short of the days, not long ago, when an Irishman in a cowboy hat and a mustache drove across town to the pub on his quad bike with his dog. Friends of the missing man still come by from time to time, asking about him, hoping perhaps that it was all a ruse after all, that one day Patty might miraculously reemerge, claim his seat at the Pink Panther, and order a fresh can of 4X Gold. The story was written by Mitch Moxley. I don't know if he's related to John. He is a writer and editor in New York who contributed to GQ, New York Times, and The Atlantic. And that is the still unsolved case. Check updates. They're still just offering a reward.
I think it's the whole town. Everybody was in.
Yeah, I mean, it might be the same as the, what's the guy's name that we did? You did the story on?
The bulldozer?
He was, no, the guy was a real piece of shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't remember it, but yeah.
And the whole town was, probably got together and plotted his murder. Yeah, who
killed him. That was one of our episodes.
That was. Yeah. And I have a follow-up story to that that we'll be doing soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pretty interesting little thing I found.
Do it right now.
We're not going to.
No.
So that's the story of Patty Moriarty.
Everybody wanted to kill him.
If you're out there listening and you killed Patty Moriarty, just turn yourself in.
Yeah. Well, come to us and let us turn you in. We'll get the money.
Yeah, come to us. Good call. Come to us. We'll turn you in. We'll get the money.
Yeah.
We'll come visit you.
Sure. We'll ride you.
Yeah. I mean, there's only 12 of you guys. We can probably, we can turn you in and come back and get you. Like, it's probably not that much of a cop. Police
no, but it was Patty after all.
It was Patty after all.
That's crazy. The dog and Patty, no bodies or anything.
I mean, Crocodile definitely seems like the most likely.
Would Crocodile eat everything?
I would assume. We're not like the limestone caverns.
Yeah.
But, you'd have to go in pretty deep to hide the body that well that nobody's ever going to find it.
Yeah.
But I think doesn't limestone,
eat away? Eat away? I think so. Yeah, lime.
Lime, yeah. That might be a different type of thing, though.
This is limestone.
We're not scientists.
Nope.
You know what I mean? We're detectives.
Not yet.
That's what we are.
Yep. We're a couple credits short.
Space detectives.
All of them.
All of them.
By a couple, I mean all of them.
All right. Well, we are going to take a break.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back. And when we come back, we'll get into post-show shenanigans.
All
right. So if you just were here for the story, goodbye. Thank you for listening. Give us a rating.
Bye.
And a review. If you're here to hear more, stick around. We'll be right back. All right, and we are back. Thank you for sticking around. We hope you enjoyed the story. We will be. You want to do a when you want to do the next real crime?
Yep.
You want to go for what do you? Oh yeah, we'll talk about this off the air.
Okay.
Off the air, off the wax.
Yep. Off wax.
You want to go for first of December?
Yeah.
That'll be our first episode in December.
Yeah, I could have that done.
So have it by December 1st.
All right, Professor.
We'll be good.
Cool.
So we'll do our next real crime then. So what's up, man?
Real R-E-E-L.
I get it.
Yeah. I don't know.
That will make sense.
Just living. L-I-V-I-N.
How's that been?
Doing comedy. I had the comedy this past week. We did the two shows with Lori Graves. Mm-hmm. The first show drew two people.
Okay.
But the second show drew 25, so it was a lot better.
Okay.
But yeah, we did the comedy for the two people. It was basically the two people in the wait staff.
Hey, I wrestled for one person.
Uh-huh.
So
I remember.
I've been there.
It was me.
Oh, no, this was even longer. This was one old man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really enjoyed it.
It was in Somersville, West Virginia, at a camp. And I don't know how the fuck we ended up there, but nobody.
Didn't do it for Ralph.
Nobody showed up at all. And about 10 minutes before the show was supposed to start, we were we'd all decided, the promoter was like, hey, you boys can go out and train if you want, but you know, we'll tear down, whatever. About 2 minutes before the show was supposed to start, and we were just going to go out there and start fucking around, one old guy walks in. He's 80, buys a ticket, sits front row.
They do chance.
We have to go ahead and do the show.
Please don't die. Please don't die.
I don't know if he moved or blinked. He might have just walked in, sat down, and died. Yeah.
Well, these two people at least enjoyed it, it seemed.
Well, that's good.
Like I said, the next show did a lot better. I'll be in Sutton this Saturday.
Sutton
this Saturday. Massillon. That's Sutton, West Virginia.
Okay.
Then Massillon, Ohio next Friday. I'm headlining.
Ooh.
Oh, gulp.
You got a tight 45?
Yeah. That'll be about 30. Mm-hmm.
That is a tight 45.
Yeah, it is. Super tight. Super tight.
All right, so Sutton, West Virginia win?
That'll be this Saturday.
Where?
West Virginia. Oh, it's the Moose Lodge, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm a member of the Moose Lodge.
I'm going back. I'm pretty sure it's at the Moose. You should come. You should come Saturday.
This Saturday?
This Saturday.
I might be able to do that.
So what day will that be on?
The 13th?
You said it.
The Hold 13th, on. Yeah. November 13th.
Here it is.
Sutton, West Virginia, at the Moose Lodge.
Yeah, but that's the Moose Lodge, Sutton, West Virginia. You should come, bro.
I'm a card-carrying member.
You are. It's November 13th, 9 p.m., $5 at the door. It's the Undeniable Comedy Tour. Okay. Put on by Lee Mays with headliner Rob Wilfong. And according to this, West Virginia's favorite, Joe Gant.
According to this,
it's the hilarious Rob Wilfong and West Virginia favorite, Joe Gant. Yes. Hear that, West Virginia? I'm your favorite!
If we go there, we can then go to this Moose Lodge here in town. Maybe get them to do comedy shows.
Let's do it.
And then when's your Massillon, Ohio?
That's the following Friday.
So that'd be the 19th.
Justin Powers is coming with one with me. It's at a place called Crackpots. Okay. Chris Kettler's new comedy club.
Crackpots?
Yeah, we're doing two shows. 7 and 9. Coming down to Crackpots.
Joel, so you tell me you're a comedian.
Got any jokes?
Can you say something funny guy?
Listen, Rooster, I didn't get up at 4:30 in the morning. But yeah, comedy.
Bazinga.
Bazinga.
I don't know what to do with a radio guy.
But yeah, it's cool. You should come to Moose Saturday.
Yeah.
This Saturday.
Where is Sutton? Like,
I don't know. I was there before, but just wherever GPS took me.
All
right. It's good right across the street from a Dollar General.
Well,
is. Yeah. I'm going to go outside. There's going to be one across from your street.
There's one right over there. There's nothing General's that's not everywhere. Across from a Dollar General.
Hey, I hung out with Smarsh.
Hey. Can't get out of radio guy voice. Yeah, I hung out with Smarsh. I couldn't move.
I feel bad for that guy.
Why?
Because he came over. We were drunk assholes, and he was totally sober.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. We hung out. We duetted on I Miss You from Blink-182. I did Mark. He did Tom.
Okay.
Yeah.
No one was trying.
Oh, I kind of got shamed for listening to Blink-182 today, too, I wanted to tell you.
What?
I was at the Family Dollar, and the lady saw my tattoo. So she's talking about my new Jason tattoo, you know, the mask.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, oh, I didn't really get to celebrate Halloween this year. And
okay.
She's like, but I thought about having a Nightmare Before Christmas. I was like, hey, like Blink-182 says, you can have Halloween on Christmas. Uh-huh. And she's looked at me all blankly, and she's like, oh, I listen to New York hardcore. I was like, oh, cool. He's like, I got all of... I started to tell her. I was like, I have all of Blink on vinyl.
I would still be like, oh, well, that sucks for you.
Yeah.
So, like, Blink-182 is awesome.
I was like, I like them. They're cool.
Yeah.
I was like, they wouldn't have Halloween on Christmas.
I listen to New York hardcore.
Okay. That's their whole personality.
Go listen to your Madball and shut the fuck up.
Face to face and fucking...
Yeah. Well, speaking of music...
That New York hardcore scene...
Speaking of music,
yeah,
thought I'd introduce a new segment to the show.
All right.
A segment that I am stealing from another show. Not a podcast. It's a normal FM radio show. Uh-huh. Fuck those guys.
Yeah. There's not even wax involved.
No. I don't think so. I don't know. the segment will be called Song Speak. It's a little cute play on words.
I get it.
What the idea here is, I got 5 songs.
Okay.
And I chose a little sample of the lyrics from each one.
Uh-huh.
And,
I'm a lyrics guy.
I'm just going to read you the lyrics. Okay. Like a normal, you know, not sing them so you don't...
Like if the CD book came with the lyrics, I would listen
and you just be reading.
Like, read along.
Blah, 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 blah. So, I got 5 of them. I think you probably... These are all bands that you know. All
right.
Or artists. So it's not like I'm, you know, some deep dive. Like
you're not
going to
do New York hardcore?
No, like, yeah. wait, let me do one. Do you know that one?
Yep.
Okay.
That's Dead Baby.
Yep. You're good.
I know.
But I sang that one, so that's not fair. That's so, all right. So, number one, my girlie ran away with my pay when fellas come to play. Now she's stuck with my homies that she fucked, and I'm just a sucker with a lump in my throat.
Well, lump makes me think President of the United States.
President of the United States.
But I don't think that's them.
My girlie ran away with my pay.
My girlie. Is that someone talking about their girlie?
When fellas came to play.
Tupac? Girlie and fellas?
Now she's stuck with my homies that she fucked.
Oh.
And I'm just a sucker with a lump in my throat.
So it's going to be
final guess.
Bismarcky.
You got 3 letters right.
Okay.
It was Limp Bizkit.
Limp Bizkit. Nookie.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew that song would come back to haunt me one day. One day.
And there it is.
Man.
All right, number two.
I got this one.
Now, as I walk down the street, I need a job just to sleep in sheets, buying food every once in a while, but not enough to purchase a smile. A tank of gas is a treasure to me. I know now that nothing is free. I talk to you every now and then.
I never felt so alone again. I don't know the name of the song, but it's Blink-182.
It's Blink-182.
It's on their greatest hits, which I've been listening to in my car for like weeks now.
You don't know the song, though?
I don't know any song titles.
That's still, it's Carousel.
Carousel, yeah, which is off the Buddha album.
Mm-hmm. No, it's off the Cheshire album.
Well, that's Buddha, Cheshire, yeah. Oh. It's just Buddha plus like other songs. Oh, okay. And they're like somewhere a little different.
I'm sorry, nerd. I only listen to New York hardcore. Nerd.
Actually!
All right, number three.
Okay. Are we done talking about Blink then? Okay. No. Well, I mean, I'm just kidding. Number three.
And as my skin collects in a pile on the ground, I'll radiate heat, turn off my head, and just pretend that I don't exist. Then I'll see clearly to the end.
Eve 6.
That could be them, but that does sound like something they would see. Yeah. No, this one is... You want me to read it one more time?
Yeah, read it one more time.
All right. And as my skin collects in a pile...
Put some skank on it.
I can't.
Okay.
I got to read... Like, that's the gimmick.
That's the thing.
It's got to be plain.
All right. I'm going to put my own skank on it.
And as my skin collects in a pile on the ground, I'll radiate heat and turn off my head and just pretend that I don't exist. Then I'll see clearly to the end.
Oh, man. It's not Eve 6.
Nope.
Is it Harvey Danger?
Nope.
All right.
It's Ups and Downs by Saves the Day.
Oh, damn. All right. I have that on vinyl. I should have got it. That's kind of New York hardcore.
Basically the same.
There was New York hardcore kids at the Saves the Day show I went to.
There you go.
Yeah. So, they were assholes.
Ipso facto.
Yep. Because Face to Face was there.
Was Ipso facto there?
Probably.
Number four.
All right.
Get everything I need, then I'm gone, but it ain't stealing. Can I get a break? I wish that I could just get out of my goddamn way.
Oh, okay.
What is there to say?
Mac Miller.
Mm-hmm.
It's good news. Yep. That's all they want to hear.
Got that one. All right, last one.
All right. I have that on vinyl.
Yeah. You know I'm cool when all the guys want to be my friend, and every little girl here wants to hold my hand. But I sold all of my songs. I'm probably going to get sued, but that's all right.
Real Big Fish.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Sold Out?
Close. It's in the lyrics.
I don't know the name of
it. I'm cool.
Okay.
But you got 3 of 5.
Yeah, thanks.
Not bad.
Passing, barely.
Yeah, that's a score of some numbers. You know, I'm not going to do the math about.
Like, the more I do it, I think I'll get better, okay?
Uh-huh.
Don't judge me.
You're up next time.
Okay, I have to bring the
You can bring
lyrics.
The 5 next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends.
Yes. The classic Elton John tune. Yeah, I think it's going to be fun.
That's cool. I like it.
So, you said you didn't have a feel-good this week.
Nope.
So...
I do have a couple stories, though.
But you have some stories.
I got stories. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah, let me hear some stories.
Okay.
No, I'm good. You can go ahead and go.
I just sit here and read like, quietly to myself.
I just walk out of the room.
Court rules Pablo Escobar's cocaine hippos are legally people.
Oh, really?
Yes. More than 80 hippos in Colombia are the first non-human creatures to be legally considered people by a U.S. court.
Why?
Because that's how they identify now. Because it says, I don't know. They're now considered people.
I knew that he had.
I just read the headline and sent myself the story. This is the first time I'm reading it.
I know because of him there are cocaine hippos.
That's it, yep.
But I didn't know they were.
Why are they?
I knew there was something going on with them, but I don't know why.
I should have read about this. I just like the headline.
All right.
The hippos are descendants of 4 legally imported by Escobar. They were set free after his death in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, the hippos have increased their numbers to more than 80. Them hippos be fucking! And they're reportedly wreaking havoc on the local ecosystem. Who would have thought 80 hippos would have been a problem?
They will do that.
Yeah. So,
I think people always say that hippos are like responsible for more deaths than like most other animals or something. Like, they're very... Not cool.
So, yeah, America's like, yeah, man, to Ohio Life Rescues, I think. They bring them to Ohio. They don't bring them to Ohio.
We don't need that kind of shit in Ohio.
God
bless. There's already enough shit in Ohio.
But yeah, maybe if you like that story, you can read the rest of it. Yeah, I'm just here to bring headlines. Doing
all the work
we'll
for
call
you.
This like Joel's headlines. Yeah. Like, this is another one. I just heard it for. I didn't read the story. A broken toilet on SpaceX capsule means astronauts will return to Earth in diapers. They're shitting in their pants. So, yeah, you went to space? Did you have to shit your pants?
Because, what are you, a baby?
Yeah. What'd you do?
Whoa, space baby.
And, like, wouldn't that cause, like, a rash? Aren't they, like, use?
I don't know. In space, who knows?
Yeah. No one can hear you poop your pants in space.
Like, what?
Okay, so if you poop your pants, do you at least go, like, off by yourself? Or are you, like, right now, me and you talking, like, if I'm wearing a diaper, I've got to shat myself twice now while we've been talking.
Like, if somebody just gets real quiet and just keeps staring right ahead.
this week at work, you know, we really got to raise our numbers and get our efforts up. And, you know, Josh, would you like to have anything? Yeah.
What were you saying?
Numbers.
Oh, yeah. Number two is a good one.
Get them up. Get the numbers up.
For all of you listening at home, that was a sketch that you didn't get to see.
Yeah, but it's good.
We don't have the technology for that.
It was really good. I thought you were... You better check your pants, because I think you did
shoot yourself. I committed. I don't fuck around.
Method. So, yeah, astronauts are shitting themselves, and pathetic. Hippos are people.
Like, Elon Musk couldn't fucking afford some kind of, like, fancy, like... Like, they said the toilet broke?
Yeah.
How the fuck is he going to let the toilet break on SpaceX?
And you know what? They obviously prepared for that, because they took... Don't take that. Just do it better. Don't prepare for the worst.
I think diapers are, like, a normal thing for astronauts, though.
Are they?
I think that's, like,
Fuck!
I'm pretty sure. Look, astronauts are basically just...
Yeah, there's no gravity, so they're going to, like, suck it down. But there's toilets, too.
Suck it down out of your butt.
Oh, yeah! Draw me a picture!
I just hang my butt out the side of one of the windows.
Yeah, dude. Just poop into space. Just suck it out, yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've seen Futurama.
Suck your asshole clean.
I know. All right, that's how...
This is the banner people stick around for.
That's how poop monsters get born. Yep. Somebody poops in space, an alien gets a hold of it, creates a whole new thing. Oh,
shit.
That's how aliens were created, I think.
Uh-huh.
Men pooping in space.
Makes sense to me.
Yep. All right, well, you got anything else before we get out of here?
Fuck.
Oh.
Yeah.
We had a poll last week.
Oh, am I a good boy?
That asked, is Joel a good boy?
Is Joel a good boy?
So, the options were yes.
Yes.
And
what else?
Yes.
Yes.
50% of people who answered said yes.
Okay. And the other 50?
The other 50% said yes.
Okay.
So, I think
100% I'm
we're
a good
neck
boy.
And neck. Joel is a good boy. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're a good boy. You're a good boy.
Look at me. I'm blushing. I feel really good right now.
You got a boner?
No. No. Isn't that way too fast? Wow. I saw someone with a boner when I answered.
No.
No. Why would I? Would I? Would? Why would
I'm just going to sit here for a while. I can't go up to the chalkboard right now.
Can I see your pillow?
No. You have a bandana that you left here. That's yours.
I do. Yep. It's gone again. It's magical bandana.
All right. Well,
let's get the fuck.
Next week, tune in for the case of the disappearance of the bandana.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Please give us
Thank
a
you.
Rating, review.
Yep.
Leave comments for things. We want to hear from you. If you stuck all the way through, thank you.
Yeah. That's
I don't know why you did that.
That was some good banner.
Don't know why you stuck around, but whatever. Thanks. All right. We'll see you guys later.
Bye.